To WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Hi everyone, my name is Stella. Please join me for a half hour of music from the 1930s and 40s. Every week I will share some of my favorite classics with an occasional surprise song from a different genre or decade. Hope you'll tune in from 3:30 to 4 o'clock every Wednesday.
Kiss me once, then kiss me twice. Kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time.
Desmarchands, a proud supporter of WGXE, is a men's and women's boutique featuring creative and classic clothing, shoes, and accessories. Now presenting our fall collections from European and American designers. Desmarchands.com. Desmarchands.com. On Warren Street in Hudson, New York.
Hello. Welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Radical Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner, and my co-host Lauren Jamboni can't join us today, but we have three guests today. We have practitioners of traditional Tibetan medicine, Chinese medicine, and Ayurveda. Right now in the studio, we have Lily Atlihan and Dr. Jinpa, and Eric Rosenbusch will be joining us in just a little bit. But before we get to the show, I just want to, it's a pledge drive time for WGXC, so I just want to remind folks that here at listener-supported radio, we really count on your support, but it's also not just listener-supported radio. It's radio for our supporters, and the difference between WGXC and commercial radio, of course, is that here we don't have any corporate agendas. We don't try to please any advertisers or anything like that. We really are by and for the people here. Our agendas are things like we do our show for the benefit of all sentient beings. We're not trying to get you to buy anything, sell anything, or even in our case, think anything in particular. We're just here to empower and inform. So today, if you can make a donation, wgxc.org, you can find the donation link on the website. Thank you so much. And to everyone who's already supported us, thanks so much. All right. So without further ado, so today we have three practitioners of some of the great wisdom traditions of the world in healing arts. And we really have a rare opportunity to have a dialogue between these different traditions. And for North American listeners, in a way, this conversation to some degree is going to decolonize the healing arts and sciences, because here in the United States, often we see some of the modalities that you find from Chinese medicine, for example, acupuncture or herbs or Ayurveda or Tibetan medicine. We see these modalities being incorporated into our existing dominant paradigm, right, of Western medicine. And, sometimes they're called complementary medicine or alternative medicine, but each of these traditions arises from its own distinctive worldview, which in some cases these traditions are many thousands of years older and longer in use than the dominant paradigm here. So the practitioners in Tibetan medicine, Chinese medicine, and Ayurveda have different kinds of training, different kinds of motivations for becoming a practitioner. And also in those traditions, of course, your Chinese medicine person would be a primary care provider. In the United States, I think New Mexico is the only place you can see your Chinese medicine doctor as a primary care provider and receive insurance and all that. So this show today, I hope, sheds some light and illuminates some of these really vibrant traditions that are still, that are unbroken lineages and are very relevant and continuing to evolve. And we are fortunate to have some really wonderful practitioners to speak to today. So without further ado, I welcome Lily Atlihan and Dr. Jinpa.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Good.
So You can actually have consultations with Lily and Dr. Jinpa, as well as our other guest. The nearest place for our listeners would be at Menla Retreat Center, which is over in Phoenicia, across the river from where we're recording now in Hudson. And you guys are going to, you can go to the website, Ozel, that's O-S-E-L, TibetanMedicine.com, and learn more about that. But, so, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Lily and Dr. Jinpa, do you want to tell us a little bit about, oh gosh, where to start? However you want to start. What do you do, Lily?
So, right now, my primary focus is doing Chinese medicine degree at Pacific College of Oriental Medicine in New York City. I'm a full-time student there. And also I translate both for Dr. Jinpa and also I do some Dharma translations when the opportunity presents itself. And Dr. Jinpa and I primarily see patients on Long Island in the New York area in like house call settings these days. But then we also have the opportunity to work up here in the Hudson Valley, seeing folks and collaborating with the people at Menla. And so that's, yeah, we sort of split our time that way.
And Dr. Jinpa, can you tell us, well, I guess I want to hear how both of you came to practice what you do, but tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Yes, ngi mong la tani jimba sa ge yos tani nga ani pon no ni tani gumba na la da di chong chong di monastery na la da di tani popa ga man dang na chi dang tani mong bo jang ens tu si ni tani ni tong je ge lo te tani jagar la yong chi ni tani yang char popa ge tani man da tani kum den ge am che da nyam ta tani practice ji a den ge chu ra sons.
So I'll just translate that. So Jinpa is from Tibet. He said when he was younger, when he was a child, he studied primarily in monasteries as he was a monk. And there he studied Tibetan medicine and Tibetan Buddhism. And then in 2004, he left Tibet for India. And in India, he continued to study Tibetan medicine and was able to do an apprenticeship under His Holiness Dalai Lama's current personal physician, Aku Tenzin Tai.
Great. And how did you meet and come to do consultations together?
So I started studying Tibetan language here in the U.S. in 2011. And then in order to do that more intensively, I moved to Dharamsala in 2013, in January. And I lived there for a total of 3 years. Jinpa and I met in 2014, middle of the year or so. And my Tibetan language classes involved sitting cross-legged on the floor for 8 hours a day, which was pretty tough on my back. So I met Jinpa because I was looking for an acupuncturist. And we met and we started seeing each other, and then we started working together later that year in like September, October or so. And then we opened a clinic together in Dharamsala where I translated for Jinpa so that he could do consultations with Westerners. And we did that until his visa came through to come to the U.S. in 2016. And then we came over, we came back to New York and we got married here.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you
very much.
Do you want to tell us, for our listeners, what does a traditional Tibetan medicine practitioner, what kind of training traditionally do you undergo, and does that continue? Mm-hmm. And how do you work with patients? Mm-hmm.
Pemen member yinara kande chini lobjong chegdu ani de kwala to shesho ani yang nepa tsu ta tu kande do chegdu
la su tani nga tsu popa gi tani man te lobjong che de tangrap nga su choron su gi
mangna manjina chokta lhopra ge tani lhopjon chi thang nga chto smandra wares ten den dinga nga chu gumba ge nang lhopjon te ma che ani memorize pe mang bu chi go ge wares ten de chi ni tani git gang ga tani thaya ta tani nyama chi la nga chu git gang ta nyam ta dad da wares chi jo pa git gang ga lap tani gon ta top a testy wares ni tu chi ni lo ma bola jang wares
So Jinpa says that the way that they study in the monasteries in Tibet is not like modern education. It really emphasizes memorization very heavily. When he was a child, of course, you also live with your teachers in the monastery, right? So you're there with them in the morning and they give you a lesson and you memorize it word for word if possible, and then they test you on it that evening, and that way you go for many years just studying texts and studying their commentaries, and so that's how Jinpa primarily studied.
Yes, the ning also gi pumman the lalin chi sang the khare lab su gi chorsong tangrap ke gani pinna chi tangrap kan thirchi da ten pe che tang ta ndi ngatsu ta thak da ten rig nang ni ni na sa khare yo me ha ko gi ares ta ga nam jing gut ni chi cancer ka na sa ten ni na zup ga la par da ten ri jab da de wa ta ni ma da ten ri ha ko gi ares ta ga nam jing nga chu yo ni pom mang ga ni tak thap ga ni tak thap chi mo sam yo ares sam te khare la se ga tra tra ta mi ka ta ta cha la ra pa ji wa sam yo di ta cha ka sam bo pe cha ta ya na nga chu ta ni cho sa na sa khare yo na cancer ka na sa yo na ri zup ga na ma yo na ri ta ga nam jing ga thak da ga na sa khare na par chi ta ni 90% ta nga chu ha ko gi ares tu si
And Jinpa says, you know, when you're practicing Tibetan medicine, also it's not like practicing Western contemporary medicine, because here much of the diagnostic work is reliant on using machines, right? And being able to check mechanically, like what the components of the blood are, or if someone has cancer, being able to do imaging. But Tibetan medicine isn't like that. They have three main diagnostic technologies. The first is inquiry. The second is visual observation, which doesn't just mean looking at the person. It also includes looking at urine. And then pulse diagnosis. And Jinpa says, using only those three and without having any access to like other kinds of external, like modern technologies, Jinpa says, you know, whether the person has cancer or a blood-borne illness or something like that, he feels that they can still tell, you know, like 90% of the time what's going on with more or less just as much accuracy.
Wow. Jinpa, had you experienced kind of any Western industrialized medicine yourself as a patient when you were growing up in Tibet, or was that something that was distant?
Not really, no.
Mm-hmm. And since you've come to the United States, have you ever had reason to consult, or do you talk to Western doctors at all, or is that?
To area level in the inji member tenga donyong gyumsen chungsunges.
Ngalatin de gyumsen chiga choma songse yin na ngalatin Western gatni doctor ten de ngosipa mangbo yos. Ngasitin Western tni medicine, the Tibetan traditional medicine ganatni kacha shadi chamita langa somda sepe mangbo des. Yin na yang tni tharthik pap sa de nga chu chigba chigla pap yong des. Yin na mixer ka kharin du lam na choron sun na changun zin chiya ta mang chi gzik ga langun zin chig des. Ta par da tni jaw yo. Yin na tni ten de indi tni choron su khari se gon na ta nga chu mang nam chon se ka khwar ta ni ka ring mathab ja. Pernachi semkham gon na ta da lakwar tu lung na ta da ten de hal ya mang bo sung yo aris. Ten de indi ni nab shog langa chu popa ga phan to che shi ta ni lung na sa ga kor la ni nga chu mixer ka tni phan tni thokon des. Nga ten de ni nyamnyong mang bo yo ze ta ga nam jeng nga na pa ta thuk jo mang chwa ta ni ten de ga na pa pa mang bo des.
Jinpa says he hasn't had any reason to go to a Western doctor since he's arrived in the U.S., but he does know many Western doctors, uh-huh. And I have a number of Western doctors in my family, actually. So.
That must be fun for you.
Yeah. So he's had a lot of conversations with Western doctors, but the thing that he has really noticed the most about Western medicine since he's come is that because most of the technologies and approaches for inquiring about the body are primarily physical, that really is quite a large distinction from Tibetan medicine, where a lot of the phenomenon that we're inquiring about in Tibetan medicine are very subtle phenomenon, which is not to say that they're not physical, but they're physical in a less coarse way than the sort of apparent physical body. And so what Jinpa means by that is mental imbalances or disturbances, those kinds of disorders having to do with the nervous system that are attributed to subtle wind in Tibetan medicine. Those are things that Jinpa thinks are particularly well treated and well diagnosed with Tibetan medicine that we struggle a little bit more with in Western medicine.
That was my next question, was if you could elaborate on the particular strengths and unique qualities that Tibetan medicine has for today's people. And certainly in my teacher, Dr. Nita's teachings, he definitely talks about some of the psycho-spiritual and nervous system diseases that often Western industrialized medicine does not have a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. So if Jinpa could elaborate a little bit and a little bit about what the treatments might be like, look like, sound like, taste like.
Sure. Dene de karasa permen gi mixe pendol ju dimina any de karasa chertang inji mi tang de karasa de turap gi mi dan sora de permen gi mixe pendol ju ge qualatos monks lapshos ani bena lungki nata dimna sem kamki nata mixe kandichene pentokdu
la sutni chetan popa ga man labjar de kope to tni system chimbo chigres dinang nga chu man thonya da ta chon chu man labdi ma cha za chi kola ko yo sares yinang nga chu man labdi tela ko mares man labdi na khoro simkam dang de ra yo ni man chig da tni simkam da yo ni man to so simkam rang ga ni samno dang dang ni jela tang go yo res.
Eric, are you on the line with us?
Hi.
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 Welcome to the show. Jinpa's just in the middle of explaining something, so let's give him a chance to do that, and then I'll introduce you to our listeners. Back to Jinpa.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. Tendi auto tendi in the Zamitella, Tending also any pokamanga gone, some not on second, any man's eye at the Tendi Guma and Bapernachi yoga that the Niti meditation daya. The Tama, the Nipopa manga, and the branch is each other. Tendi indeed any same emotion that any same gangatoso, same rangagon, some not on the gun in Jeratangori Marto, and that you manchis in Jeratanga to pick up the caporis. Natsu manga non is my natilla, and the Blungan at Sagres, and the Tendi Jolan. Ni popaga manga tanda in nzambu longa ni japsha dubya pema bo yari samgundus.
Sorry,
that's okay. That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a long answer, but I'll try to take it in pieces. So Jinpa he started out saying that in Western medicine and generally in like Western culture, when we talk about medicine, primarily we just think about, you know, pills and other kinds of interventions surgery, like that, you know, and within Tibetan medicine, for treating mental and emotional imbalances, there are lots of things that are considered medicine, the practice of yoga, the practice of meditation, and such forth, that are also classed as branches of medical practice. And particularly with lung or wind imbalance, these are emphasized. And so that's something that Tibetan medicine has really a lot to offer the West.
Sarpa and Alangas, Lacha Sarpa, and the Pumangan, each absolute tat in the John Sares.
And Jinpa just wants to add that for diseases that are really chronic and intractable, like certain forms of hepatitis or diabetes, that Tibetan medicine also has a lot to offer. Particularly in places like India, where Tibetan medicine is pretty widely available, there are lots of patients who have seen remarkable reversals of these kinds of conditions, and that hopefully in the future there can be more research into using Tibetan medicine as one of the therapies for these kinds of intractable conditions.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Okay, Eric, we've got Eric Rosenbusch on the line. Eric, I've just asked Lily and Jinpa the same question I'm going to ask you, but first... Eric is on the line calling us from Menla, which we mentioned earlier, over in Phoenicia. Eric, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and what you're a practitioner of? And then we can answer the question, what are the strengths of the modalities you practice and maybe the things that contemporary people living in the United States might find most useful about them?
Sure. Okay, great. Hi, Sarah, and Lily and Jinpa, and Tashkele to everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
So, let's see. I can say that I'm here right now kind of as an ambassador for my teacher. His name is Dr. Nida Chenatsang. He's a traditional Tibetan doctor. Really, thanks to his teaching, Tibetan medicine has spread to many parts of the world. And for example, what we're doing currently at Menla Mountain is we're working with the traditional Tibetan massage practice, which is called Punye, right? And that's a wonderful practice. It's kind of a wide vocabulary of different types of massage techniques. We also have external therapies like cupping and moxibustion, acupuncture, and so on. So currently for the next couple of weeks here, we're focusing more on these external therapies. But otherwise, I spend most of the year living in Asia, where I'm also practicing Tibetan medicine, as well as Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine as well. And so we have a clinic and a herbal pharmacy and are doing many of these therapies and so on. That's a little bit about me. Regarding what Tibetan medicine...
And Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, too. You can speak about all of the modalities that you practice as you wish.
Okay, great. I can say that one of the things that I love about Tibetan medicine specifically is that somehow it has for at least 1200 years and likely for a lot longer been synthesizing the best and most effective elements of all of the other medical traditions of the world, of Chinese medicine, Indian medicine, ancient Greek and Persian medicine. And somehow Tibetan medicine found a very special way to take the best of all of these with the spirit of the Tibetan Buddhist practice, which is extremely profound, as well as the indigenous Tibetan healing traditions, which go back for millennia. So personally, I find that Tibetan medicine is a wonderful way of bridging gaps between all of these systems with the West. And I find that, for example, many people have read maybe some basic book on Ayurveda or seen an acupuncturist or done some Qigong or learned some little bits of these different medical systems. And somehow I find Tibetan medicine is a way to understand how all of it fits together. And even Tibetan medicine is amazing in its ability to understand Western medicine. Mm. Somehow in Tibetan medicine, we can see the anatomy and pathology. It won't use the same language and necessarily the same diagnostic techniques, but oftentimes, especially Tibetan medicine, has a way of understanding modern diseases. And I think that's something extremely precious. And also, as Jimpala said, you know, the emphasis also on other forms of healing, mm-hmm. using meditation, using rituals, using visualization, mantras, yogic practices, all kinds of herbs, diet, lifestyle, self-care practices. I mean, there is such a rich wealth of all of these in classical Asian medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially as the contemporary medical system, you know, all over the world, but definitely in the United States, is less and less effective in many ways. And it's very much not good at keeping people healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay at keeping sick people from getting less sick in some kind of cases, but yeah, oftentimes that ability to prolong life and prevent disease and keep the body vital and so on, it often doesn't have much to offer. So I think that Asian medicine is very useful for that,
mm-hmm.
and as well as for the treatment of many conditions, especially chronic diseases and things like that.
Yeah, and in my experience, you know, Western medicine is very sort of post-trauma, specific post-traumatic experience focused. I mean, like you have a car accident and it, you know, will sew you back together, or you wait until you're very sick and then they might intervene. And for me personally, the great Asian traditions have such a different worldview on every level. We don't even begin at the same place when we consider seeking a practitioner. You know, we begin in the Asian traditions with...
without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, definitely.
And Eric, can you tell us how you came to practice the practices that you are conversant in, which is, again, for folks, traditional Tibetan medicine, as well as Chinese medicine and Ayurveda? How did you come to study those?
My teacher, Dr. Nida, or very traditionally trained doctor like Jimpala, who really, you know, grew up in that tradition and was, you know, infused with it at an early age. For me, I was actually first exposed to a lot of these things through my local bookshop as I was a kid, and I would just read through the books in the library and explore what knowledge existed in the world. And then later, yeah, I was blessed to encounter some different kinds of teachers and learn different kinds of practices, meditation practice and yogic practices. And yeah, and was always drawn to healing. In university, I studied ethnobotany and was always very interested in medicinal plants and these kinds of things. So eventually it all came together. And Tibetan medicine was, for many years, was something that I was fascinated by and would read books about, but was unable to access because of, you know, I didn't speak fluent Tibetan language. And even traveling around Asia, the English language resources were very limited. So I would visit different doctors and clinics, but there was no real opportunity to really do something and learn something in a deeper way. So in that sense, when I met my teacher, Dr. Nida, it was a great opportunity because he was, you know, he's fluent in English and is really very open about sharing a lot of things. So really, thanks to him, you know, I was able to practice Tibetan medicine.
Amazing.
And then, I think in the United States and in a lot of the world, Chinese medicine really has been a pioneer. Right. So in the U.S., currently, traditional Chinese medicine is the only government licensed or recognized Asian medical system.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, it's thanks to the hard work of, you know, decades of people that are practicing and patients and so on, it's been able to get a recognition. And now, you know, as a result of that, then the Ayurvedic and Tibetan medicine are also coming. So I'm grateful to have been, you know, to live in a place where I could go to an acupuncture college and I can, you know, receive official permission to practice Asian medicine as a primary healthcare system.
That's great. My next question I'm going to ask to you first, Eric, and then I'm going to ask Lily and Jinpa to ask this, to answer the same question. So for our listeners, what does a consult and what does an ongoing patient doctor or patient practitioner, as we say, relationship look like in traditional Tibetan medicine, in traditional Chinese medicine, and in Ayurveda? Can you give us, I know it's just a short radio show, but just some idea, you know, I think our listeners know how you go to see a doctor and make an appointment like that. And, but can you maybe describe, you know, how long does the practitioner or doctor consult with you? How often, what kinds of things might be prescribed to a patient?
Wow, yeah, that's definitely a big question. And of course, it's a very open question, too.
Yes.
and, you know, so many different types of practitioners will have their own styles and ways that they work. I think maybe the most essential thing is the diagnosis, right? Which is how that practitioner can understand what's happening in the patient. Right, it's how you can be truly seen, right? And there's so many different techniques of diagnosis. So many doctors, many practitioners are really experts at pulse. So perhaps they just feel your pulse, and in feeling your pulse, they will know so much about who you are and what's going on in your body and so on. Right, so for example, for many of these doctors, especially some of these extremely senior doctors who've been practicing for, you know, decades and seen tens and tens of thousands of patients, maybe they don't need to talk to you so much.
They can just take your pulse and know all.
And these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And of course, that can be an incredibly powerful thing. Mm-hmm. In Tibetan medicine, we use all of our sense organs. So we'll use our vision to look at the body, look at their body language, as well as to especially urine diagnosis, which is something quite unique,
mm-hmm.
and pulse. And then, of course, there is the asking of questions cases, right? And for...
Oops, our phone. You're cutting out.
And so on. Oh, excuse me.
Our connection
is that more clear now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, so yeah, I'll take a case history and do a good medical charting, and you know, and understand very, very clearly the progression of the disease. So mm-hmm. I'd say, you know, maybe that's what I'd like to share, and then Jinpa can continue with some other things. Mm-hmm. Is that the diagnosis is something really special.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that's incredible about a lot of these, you know, traditional Tibetan doctors, as well as, you know, other practitioners of these classical Asian medical sciences, is that extremely refined diagnostic ability. Mm-hmm. You know, just as now we have more and more fancy machines and MRIs and, you know, lab tests and so on, in the past, it was the doctor, it was the practitioner who had to refine their own mind and refine their own being as a diagnostic tool, right?
Yes.
And then can develop these extremely profound mm-hmm. techniques of pulse and so on. So I think that's maybe something that's very unique compared to other types of medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you so much. Jinpa mentioned a little bit earlier, we were talking about the diagnostics being... Mm-hmm. a very special component of traditional Tibetan medicine. Do you have anything further to add, taking in what Eric has just said?
Eric is absolutely right that what a consultation looks like with a practitioner of any of these systems will vary greatly depending on who the practitioner is, and also on the patient, you know?
Right.
If people come in with like a twisted ankle, that's very different from someone with, you know, chronic serious illness.
Right.
But at least in terms of our practice, I can give sort of an idea of what a consultation is like.
That'd be great.
Yeah, in a day-to-day way. Usually we'll ask the patient to collect a urine sample the morning of the consultation. We ask that they not eat any beets or turmeric or really strongly colored things the night before, because looking at the color is very important. And then depending on the patient, like I said, Jimpa will check their pulse either before or after we've started our conversation to get a sense of their overall constitution. And pulse taking can take quite a while. In my experience, Jimpa takes pulses longer than, you know, you like a practitioner might if you went to like a maybe typical Western person practicing acupuncture or TCM. Usually our consultations, if it's a first visit, will be about an hour and 30 minutes. So we have a very extensive conversation, about the patient's, health goals and their situation. And then, we recommend usually treatment, along the four lines of treatment in Tibetan medicine, which are dietary, behavioral, medicinal, and then external therapies. And the way that those are emphasized or de-emphasized is dependent on the person. And when we're at Menla, we can then recommend that people be treated there with the wonderful external therapies that are available in their spa, and then we can talk with the therapists about what the patient's constitution is like and what they can emphasize. And when we are practicing, on our own on Long Island or in the city, then we might do those external therapies ourselves, body work or what have you. So that's sort of generally what our consultation structure is sort of like.
That's great. Thanks so much. And thanks all three of you for answering the same question in expressing the plurality of practitioners very well there. And my next question, I think, is more for Eric, but also to Lily and Jinpa. Eric, you practice in three great wisdom traditions. When you have a patient come to you, how do you decide which lens to work through, which tradition? Is it solely based on the patient coming to you, or do you make suggestions about sort of which worldview to look through when you work with someone?
Oh, that's a very good question. It depends on a variety of factors. Mm-hmm. One being what I have in my pharmacy. Mm-hmm. If I'm in India, where I have a pharmacy of mostly Tibetan herbs and some Ayurvedic herbs, I'm not thinking in terms of making a Chinese herbal prescription, right? So
right.
Then I that part is not so relevant. However, I do find that there are enough commonalities where there is a kind of translation that can go on inside my mind. I will choose which stream to focus on. But often, for example, between Tibetan medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, there is often a lot of similarity. And then Chinese medicine will often have a similar outcome, but perhaps a different way to get there or a different language that they use. So for example, there's different ways to feel pulse. There's different actual positions of the fingers between Tibetan medicine and Chinese medicine. And so then it also just depends what I'm doing. If I'm doing a Tibetan medicine more of an overall consultation, like Lily was saying, where we'll be prescribing dietary recommendations, lifestyle, medicine, and these kinds of things, I might focus more in the Tibetan channel. If I'm seeing someone for acupuncture, I might think more in terms of Chinese medical disease models. But I can say that even within Chinese medicine, there are so many simultaneous ways to look at things. Mm-hmm. Chinese medicine is such a vast kind of conglomeration of different systems that mm-hmm. even in Chinese medicine, it's like, okay, do you do Shanghan or do you do meridian therapy or you do a more TCM style or a, you know, Han dynasty versus a Ming dynasty. And actually they can be totally different in their language and their analysis. So
yes,
I think there's always, it's always a kind of what does that person need? And we have to just assess that.
Yes.
And then move forward from that. So sometimes I just feel, okay, this person, we need to go Ayurvedic style treatment, other persons more Chinese or Tibetan. Yeah.
Thanks. Lily, do you have anything to say about your thoughts? You're still a student of Chinese mm-hmm. medicine, mm-hmm. so I don't know if you've formulated an opinion about this, but do you have thoughts about how you'll proceed in the future?
Well, I think Eric expressed this, spoke to this really clearly that, you know, Chinese medicine isn't really like a monolith even unto itself. This is something that Jinpa and I will sometimes discuss. I think it has to do with the emphasis of the diagnostic style and what kind of patient presentation you're looking at. I think Tibetan medicine, largely developed in a very cold climate and is really good at treating, it's really phenomenal at treating disorders that have to do with cold imbalance in the body, mm-hmm. Those styles of medicine that developed in southern China have a lot to say about treating febrile diseases, so I think that there's, different styles have, a lot to offer for each different case. And it's something that I'm, really only now dipping my toes into. But there's so much there.
Great. We've discussed how a significant difference between these wisdom traditions and Western medicine are the diagnostic methods. Another thing that I personally, when working with people only familiar with Western medicine, find that there's a little bit of a learning curve around is the notion of constitutions and constitutional mm. models. And all of the traditions we're talking about today employ constitutional models. I'm going to ask this to both Eric and Lily and Jinpa, and maybe Eric, you can go first. Could you unpack for the listener just a little bit what that means? What are constitutions and how are they used by the practitioner?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay, so you can say from the moment of our conception, in a Western medical idea, our genetic code is established, right? Which makes a certain kind of blueprint of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
What Asian medicine would say is that the essence of the mother and father, as well as our own consciousness that is coming from a previous life into this body, has a balance of the different elements, right? So what that balance is collectively set. Then we have the 9 months in the womb and we're born, right? And so then from that point, we have a certain kind of basis of who we are. And a description that I really like that my teacher, Dr. Nita, likes to say is, for example, sometimes if you see a photo of somebody when they're, 5 years old, and then you see a photo of that same person when they're 75 years old, and you can recognize that's the same person, right? And there's mm-hmm. a certain continuity in how the personality is or how some aspect of the body structure is. So constitution is something like that. It's a baseline, right, for everything that's going to happen in life. And some of us will be more hot type people. We'll have more fire element, right? We'll always run hot. We'll be hungry. We'll have a tendency towards anger and so on. Other people throughout their life, they'll be cold type people, right? They'll tend to be cold. They'll always want to put more clothes on and, these kinds of things, right? So this is something that's innate,
mm-hmm.
That's really established, that's our baseline, right? And that we have to always work with. So maybe what kind of food you eat, what kind of, yoga you do, what kind of, you know, other spiritual practices and lifestyle. We should base it around your constitution. But at the same time, everything's always changing. And what we need when we're five and what we need when we're 75 are not exactly the same foods and things. So we have to look at the constitution as a baseline and then really see what do we need right now? How do we work with our season, our climate, right? And take that in context to our constitution, right? And so I think that dynamic of looking at us having a kind of constitutional basis and then working with what's appearing and what we really need from point to point is a really, you know, it's a really special aspect of Asian medicine. Mm. And the idea of really medicine being something personalized, that five people with the same disease might need five different treatments because they have different constitutions, because they have different things that they come in to the situation with. Right. And understanding that, then medicine also, yeah, it becomes more effective and it also becomes alive.
Yeah. Beautiful explanation. Thank you. And yeah, I mean, I think often we are, of course, in a society where there's a lot of emphasis on purchasing things as the way to fix a situation. Many of us have internalized that. And, you know, we get the question, oh, what's that herb good for? Or this herb is good for everybody. Or, you know, this herb is good for when you have a cold. And so with this kind of thinking, then, you know, going into the constitutional model of healthcare for some folks feels a little daunting. But I think as we've just heard Eric's very subtle and nuanced explanation, that means your treatment is going to be just as subtle and nuanced and therefore all the more effective. Do you have anything to add, you guys?
I would just say, as the person in our team who is responsible for really trying to translate the medical information that Jinpa is receiving and putting and giving back to a Western audience who often do not have a lot of previous exposure to Tibetan medicine or to any other Asian medicines. I would say that although grasping the constitutional style language can be a little tough for people, it is actually, I find, a really useful kind of shorthand to talking about, you know, saying like, well, this is a related to a cold imbalance or a heat imbalance, because that's a much easier concept to quickly get across than to talk about the intricacies of Tibetan physiology and all of the physiological theories and how different they are from the Western explanation of human physiology, you know? So it's, although it can sometimes be a little tricky for people because it is so, it requires such individual attention, it's also a pretty accessible way for people to relate to the ideas that we're putting out there.
Great. Yeah, the language ultimately is more accessible to each person. You know, we all know what hot and cold are.
Right.
Sometimes I see patients and they're sort of struggling with these pages of diagnoses, you know, with like certain types of cancer names and medicine names and lots of Latin and Greek prefixes and suffixes.
Right.
And it doesn't really mean too much to them. But,
right.
Yeah. So my next question is what are kind of both the things you find most challenging and most rewarding about practicing today these wisdom traditions that are still vital and contemporary, but are rooted in centuries of tradition? Eric, you want to start?
Oh, sorry. I didn't quite catch that again.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, I just wondered, so we're talking about some wisdom traditions that they're still growing and changing and evolving, but they're also very ancient. And can you talk about just some of your own personal, the things you find most rewarding and maybe the things you find most challenging in day-to-day practice globally? You know, you're in several locations. Any kind of success stories that you feel especially like rewarded by, or learning opportunities?
Yeah, constant. Of course, it's still a beautiful thing every day when it works, you feel something, you feel the pulse or you check the chart and it's like, oh, that's your experience. And then, and they take the medicine or do the therapy and people feel better.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the most rewarding thing. But I think what honestly really fascinates me, is that you look at the geography and the climate of India, Tibet, China, all of these kinds of places, and they've developed systems that are perfect for these climates that they developed in. Mm-hmm. How the diet works, how to understand seasons, and how to understand disease fluctuation in seasons, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And what fascinates me is, okay, what if you go to Lapland? What if you go to the Amazon, or Australia, or places where the season patterns are different? And then what are the universal principles that we can derive from these things? And how can we really discover, okay, this is the pattern in this place, right? And how the climatic factors will affect us. And how in each place there's a certain tendency that certain things happen, and why people will get the same kind of symptoms at a certain time.
Mm.
So personally, I'm really fascinated by that, also because I travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I will present these kind of, how traditional medicine understands these things in different places. And then we have to say, okay, well, what does the traditional medicine or traditional understanding of your great, 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 great grandparents, what did they say about the seasons, right? What's the local dietary guidelines that people already have? And to me, to reach a kind of global understanding of natural medicine based on these principles is what I think really inspires me. And because I do feel that both Tibetan, Ayurvedic, and Chinese medicine, they are universally applicable anywhere. We just have to understand it.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Lily and Jinpa, thank you so much, Eric.
Yeah, tani ngatsu ta pupa gmang tani kabli ge korean ba yna tani mansa ge korte. Manla yna ni ta tsa cheshi te tani mansa chak yores. Tendendi tendinga tsuchi ta jami yenare ta ga namjen ge jagare yenare koron tin mansa ge yang koron ge kare sa gonar ta traditional ge mang ge yo mansa ta so pechu ta ta ra ge mares janak ta jagar so na sacha pe tro sa yenna ge ta ga namjen ge tni na cha na ta per na chi chawa da ta ga namjen ge tipa ge konso tog ba ge man tendi mang bu yares konso la ta ga namjen ge popa to pe ta sacham tho sa ne tendi da jion di yang miksar ge tni trawa ge man pe ya bu yares Tendendi tansan tan zamlang ga namshi da deri njirwa mambo chik da ta ga lhaqwar ta ta chapsa dan deri njirwa ga gwaan ga tani mancha ta so khorang shi sa taqda gu ni chi maa thaa yuwa o tendendi ta mancha chi shankha la ta ga yinna yang ti niwa ta taqda ga yung ga yume ta nani nga tu mancha chi ga gaana samlo taqna ku longba ga nyin ni che jo da shim ni che jo da ni chi par ni che jo ta dhigi chapar pa yuwa res tendendi kangar te khare labsa ga ta mancha te taqda ga nga tu zo thamma ta kangar cheshi chu res
Jinpa says that one of the biggest areas of challenge, he feels, is actually medicinal substances, medicinal herbs themselves. So he says, for example, herbs that grow in places like India, which have a very hot climate, have a very hot potency may have hot potency. And they, for that, and so, sorry, I translated that wrong. What I actually meant to say was they have developed lots of herbal treatments that have to do with treating hot imbalances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And similarly in Tibet, which is a high arid climate, they've developed lots of medicinal treatments for cold imbalances. And so you have this regional specificity, but also because of the way the climate is changing around the world and because of various political and economic factors, it's sometimes hard to get herbs from the environment that they are originally from. Mm-hmm. And in the medical text, it says that an herb that grows on the shady side and the sunny side of a mountain will have different potencies, right? So then if we take an herb out of its indigenous environment and move it to another place, how can we know what kind of medical potency it's going to have? And doing that kind of research and investigating those questions is a very subtle and difficult thing to assess. So that's really one of the biggest challenges that Jinpa feels faces Tibetan medicine now.
Thank you. That was very interesting. We're coming up to the end of the show. We have about 5 minutes left, so I want to give the floor over to each of you for a couple minutes to let us know what projects you're working on, how people can contact you, and if there's anything that I wasn't able to ask you about that you're just burning with desire to share with our listeners. So, Eric, if you want to start, tell us where people can find you and what projects you got going on and anything else.
Okay, yeah, sure. Okay, well, actually, to tie in with what Jinpala just said, I'll share with you the main project, or one of my main projects that I spend a lot of the year and a lot of my time focusing on, is actually working a lot with another aspect of what Jinpala was saying about the access to medicinal plants, which is that due to climate change and due to over-harvesting by, human markets and so forth, a lot of the precious medicinal plants that are used in these, especially Tibetan medicine and high-altitude plants used in Ayurveda and so on, are becoming extremely threatened. And really, for there to even be a future of being able to use these substances, there needs to be some kind of intervention, because now, even 10, 20 years ago, the wild populations were much higher of many of these plants. And now, you go up in the high mountains and they're really threatened. So one of the projects that I spend a lot of my energy working with is called the Dunagiri Foundation, Dunagiri. The website is dunagiri.org. And so basically, we are working in high-altitude regions, mostly in Indian Himalaya, and we are working with farmers to cultivate these medicinal plants. And just as Jinpala was saying, many of the plants, they are very sensitive, and there's a different property if they're grown on the sunny side and shady side. So, of course, we're working with farmers and botanists and traditional doctors to try to determine the suitable places and to encourage the sustainable cultivation of these plants. Because I feel also for myself as... What's that?
I'm going to have to cut you off because we're coming to the end of the show. So that's dunagiri.org. And what's your other website, really fast? We can post it on the Facebook page.
My website or his website?
We'll do that. And Lillian Jinpa, what's your website?
It's OSEL Tibetan Medicine, OSEL TibetanMedicine.com.
Eric, one more minute. What's the website, Sorig? Which Sorig address would you like?
Okay, so yeah, our big network of international Tibetan medicine organizations is sorik.net, sorig.net. And for U.S. activities, it's Sorik Institute, sorig institute.org.
That's terrific. And all of these great folks we've been speaking with together, Eric is a senior teacher with Sorik International, and Lillian Jinpa will shortly be also teaching in the region. So you can find out about all of that on websites that I will be sure to post on the Facebook page for Roots Runners Rhizomes, Radical Health and Healing from the Underground, which you've been listening to. And again, our guests were Eric Rosenbusch and Lily Atlihan and Dr. Jinpa. And we are so grateful to all of you for being here today. And we could have many, many hours of great conversation with all of you. Sorry to cut everyone short. And we'll have to have you back on the show sometime. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care, Eric. Bye-bye.